another week. Welcome to the show. Hi, everybody. I know I wasn't here for half the week last week. I was traveling to Chicago to be with my family. And it's good to be back. It's good to be back with you guys. Thank you for joining. Welcome to the show. And yeah, I hope you have told the family members that are in your life that you love them and that you think about them and call them, call your grandmother. Don't just look at her Facebook posts. And yeah, so my grandmother passed and I traveled for the funeral last week. Ended up just having a really fantastic time with my family. I have a very large family on her side of the family. She had 12 kids. So huge family. I've got a lot of aunts and uncles. So it was really good to see them all. They live all over the place, all over the country, and you know, we don't get enough time really together because we're so spread apart, you know. So it was really good to see everybody, and thank you very much for understanding that, you know, I had to take some time off the show, step away from the news. And sure enough, I get back to the news and my goodness, the world is on fire. Or maybe it was just always burning. I just never paid attention. I don't know. Ugh. Anyway, I hope you are doing well. I hope your life is improving and that you are taking steps to further your own self, because that's all the only choice we have in this life, right? So, yeah, today we got a fun show. I'm not doing politics today. That's right. No politics. I am avoiding it. I mean, technically, I'm going to lightly touch on it because it involves the Cold War and kind of the space race and how we ended up going to space. Yuri Gagarin is the first human being to go into space. And now they, you know, they like to make it like a Russian thing, but honestly, it's an amazing thing that happened. And we're going to talk about it. This 60 years ago today was his historic flight into orbit, this the globe. One time. It was really awesome. So we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to talk about this new city that was found in Egypt. All right. This city is 3,400 years old and it's immaculate. They say it's one of the best finds, archaeological finds that they've ever found. Really incredible. I got lots of cool stuff to talk about that. A bunch of different pictures to show you guys. It's very cool. Very exciting stuff. And then we're going to talk about cicadas. All right. I don't know if you guys know about cicadas. I grew up with cicadas. I grew up in the Midwest. So going camping, going out in the woods, just being out in nature, you always heard cicadas. There's like the sound that they make. And I was in Chicago when the last 17-year cicadas came out, and it was insane. I don't know how many people have experienced this, but it's coming up this year. Sometime soon, the cicadas are going to pop out, and probably right when it turns warm, they're going to just pop out and they're going to be everywhere. Billions of them. It's going to be insane. I don't know how many people know about this, these cicadas, but they're crazy. So I'm gonna talk about them and, you know, get into the details about what they are and why they're so different from other cicadas. Because there's cicadas that are around, but these are a special 17 year. So every 17 years, they lay dormant. Anyway, we're talking about it. It's very cool. Just to remind everybody to go please check out my Krigler Coffee Instagram that my sister is running. She just wanted to pop in and help me out. It was really cool. So go check it out, Krigler Coffee on Instagram. You can also check out the KriglerCoffee.com. I got some delicious coffee. I was in Chicago for a week and around all of these Kriglers, and everyone's like, you've got coffee. Like, we're so hyped on it. Like, let's order some. And the only thing that sucked was there wasn't Krigler coffee to be had. Well, actually, my dad had some at his house. But everyone was, they only had one bag left. So don't worry, Dad. Coffee's on the way. He's going to have some more and a couple mugs that I've sent over to him. But it is so nice to have good coffee again. There's a little Krigler coffee right here. Yeah. And if you have ordered Krigler coffee, thank you, first and foremost. And secondly, please use the hashtag Krigler Coffee. Anytime you post anything, social media, trying to tag me, hashtag Krigler Coffee, we're going to end up probably posting it on our Instagram, which you can see there's a couple posts from people that have ordered our coffee. It was very cool. Obviously, there's a bunch from me. And then, of course, in my Discord, there's a bunch of different pictures that people have made. The Chosen One out in Discord. Thanks, buddy. You have made some incredible memes. So, anyway, let's get to the subjects, shall we? All right. So, 60 years ago today, we've got... Hold on, let me... Gotta move this around a little bit. There we go. 60 years ago today, the first human being went into space. Now that's just cool to think about. Like, you know how I love space. I'm all about space. And this man was the first man to go to space. First human. I don't know if people get upset about whatever. I don't care. He's the first man to go to space. It's awesome. Yuri Gagarin. If you don't know about him, you should. You know, it's like it was this U.S. versus Russia, who's going to, you know, Sputnik. They started with Sputnik, and they got it out there, and then all of a sudden, Americans were like, ah, they're spying on us, we got to get into space, and it was the space race, and, you know, it became this race, but I'm looking at it like, this is the first man to space. Like, this guy's, it's pretty inspiring. So let's read about him. So, he was the first person to fly in space. His flight on April 12th, 1961 lasted 108 minutes as he circled the Earth for a little more than one orbit in the Soviet Union's Vostok spacecraft. And I actually have an image of that. Let me see if I can find it. Here it is. This is cool. This is basically it. He was by himself. Look how cool that thing is. This is dope. All right. So let's see. Here's there's Yuri there. He's got three portholes to view. See, we got some hatches, a TV camera. Look at that camera. That's basically it. It was just like him and a camera. Ejection seat blast cosmonaut out of the capsule before landing. That's right. They didn't have landing gear on this thing. He actually was rocketed out of it and just landed with a parachute. So he kind of did a skydive. So really interesting. All right, let's get back to the article here. Following the flight, Gagarin became a cultural hero in the Soviet Union. Even today, more than six decades after the historic flight, Gagarin is widely celebrated in Russian space museums, with numerous artifacts, busts, statues displayed in his honor. And I have just a few pictures, murals, and I'm going to show you them all in a second. There's so many. This dude is idolized, rightly so. It's pretty amazing. It's the first human being to go into space that we know about, right? I'm just let's see here. His remains are buried at the Kremlin in Moscow, and part of his spacecraft is on display at the RKK Energia Museum. Gagarin's flight came at a time when the United States and the Soviet Union were competing for technological supremacy. In space, the Soviet Union had already sent its first artificial satellite, called Sputnik, into space on October 1957. Before Gagarin's mission, the Soviets sent a test flight into space using a prototype of the Vostok spacecraft. During this flight, they sent a life-size dummy called Ivanovich and a dog named Zvezdochka. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Probably not, but that's all right. Into space. After the test flight, the Soviets considered the vessel fit to take a human into space. All right. Now, before I continue on there, I have to bring this up. It was... So before Yuri... I mean, yes, Yuri was the first human. But before Yuri, there was actually another living thing that we sent, and it was a dog. And I want to give it its due. I know it's a little different, but this is Laika. The dog was the first living creature to be launched into Earth orbit on board the Soviet artificial satellite Sputnik 2, November 3rd, 1957. It was always understood that Laika would not survive the mission, but her actual fate was misrepresented for decades. All right, fair warning. This is sad. This is a sad story. I feel for this dog. I think this is actually rather terrible. And it's, I don't know. Some people try to make it okay that it was fine. I don't know. It's a terrible story. I love dogs. I love animals in general. Animals are amazing creatures. And this dog was a mutt on the street, and they gathered a bunch of other mutts and brought them in, and she happened to be the right kind of temperament, size. They chose a female dog over a male dog because they said that it she, I don't know, they were better accustomed to a small habitat, and they trained her to eat jellied food. Interesting. They spun her in a centrifuge to get her accustomed to changes in gravitation. And when the launch was announced, Laika became an international celebrity. The satellite and its passenger soon acquired the journalistic nickname of Mutnik. All right, we'll give you that. It's pretty good because it was a mutt. So the accounts implied the dog was kept alive for 6 to 7 days into the mission and then euthanized with poisonous food before her oxygen supply ran out. That's what they claimed for a long time, but it actually turned out the satellite was destroyed, re-entering the Earth's atmosphere in April 14th, 1958. But it's actually come out later on that they had her hooked up to heart rate, so they can find out what her heart rate was, and just on taking off and getting into space, she died in basically the taking off. And this was not until 2002 that they actually released this information. So it's pretty sad. Like, this, they sent a dog and she died on the way out into space. And I guess she was in space before passing out and passing on. So I just I think it's a terrible thing to do to a dog. Any animal that doesn't understand what's happening, it's a sad thing. And I don't know. Even Yuri became a later on in his life, after he took his first flight, they basically barred him from flying again because he was too much of a hero. They didn't want to risk losing him. He was supposed to fly in the Soyuz 1, and he even said, "It's not ready. It's not ready. You need better safety checks. I can tell you right now that this isn't right." And in fact, it wasn't. And the original pilot actually passed on. I'm not sure if it blew up or not, but I guess I'm jumping around. Let's get back to Yuri. So back to Yuri, the third of four children, Yuri Gagarin. I don't even know, Alexeyevich Gagarin. Maybe I said it. Seemed all right. Was born March 9th, 1934. That's Tim's birthday, actually, in a small village 100 miles from Moscow. As a teenager, Gagarin witnessed a Russian Yak fighter plane make an emergency landing near his home. When offered a chance years later to join a flying club, he eagerly accepted, making his first solo flight in 1955. Only a few years later, he submitted his request to be considered as a cosmonaut. More than 200 Russian Air Force fighter pilots were selected as cosmonaut candidates. Such pilots were considered optimal because they had exposure to forces of acceleration and the ejection process, as well as experience with high-stress situations. Gagarin, a 27-year-old senior lieutenant at the time, was among the pilots selected. On April 12th, 1961, at 9:07 a.m., Moscow time, the Vostok 1 spacecraft blasted off from the Soviet's launch site. Because no one was certain how weightlessness would affect the pilot, the spherical capsule had very little in way of onboard controls. The work was done either automatically or from the ground. If an emergency arose, Gagarin was supposed to receive an override code that would allow him to take manual control. But Sergei Karolev, chief designer of the Soviet space program, disregarded protocol and gave the code to the pilot prior to the flight. Over the course of the 108 minutes, Vostok 1 traveled around the Earth once, reaching a maximum height of 203 miles. The spacecraft carried 10 days' worth of provisions in case the engines failed, and Gagarin was required to wait for the orbit to naturally decay. But the supplies were unnecessary. Gagarin re-entered Earth's atmosphere, managing to maintain consciousness as he experienced forces up to 8 times the pull of gravity during his descent. Vostok 1 had no engines to slow its reentry, and no way to land safely. About 4 miles up, Gagarin ejected from the spacecraft and parachuted to Earth in order for the mission to be counted as an official spaceflight. The Federation Aeronautique International, FAI, the governing body of aerospace records, had determined that the pilot must land with the spacecraft. Soviet leaders indicated that Gagarin had touched down with the Vostok 1, and they did not reveal that he had ejected until 1971. Regardless, Gagarin still sets the record as the first human to leave Earth's orbit and travel into space. I think so. Does it matter that he didn't land with the spacecraft? I mean, if they weren't sure how it was going to land, I'm pretty happy that he was able to eject out of there and survive. Yeah. Anyway, upon his return to Earth, Gagarin was an international hero. A cheering crowd of hundreds of thousands of people greeted him in Red Square, a public plaza in Moscow. A national treasure, Gagarin traveled around the world to celebrate the historic Soviet achievement. When he returned home, Gagarin became a deputy of the Supreme Soviet of the Soviet Union, the highest legislative body in the Soviet Union, and was appointed commander of the cosmonauts detachment. Because the Soviets did not want to risk losing such an important public figure, they were hesitant about allowing Gagarin to return to space. He continued to test flights for the Air Force, however. On March 27, 1968, Gagarin was killed, along with another pilot, while test piloting a MiG-15, a jet fighter aircraft. He was survived by his wife, Valentina Ivanovna Goyacheva, I'm terrible with these Russian names, apologies, and two of his daughters. NASA's Apollo 11, the first mission to put people on the moon, landed in July 1969, and the crew left behind a commemorative medallion bearing Gagarin's name. They also left medallions of other astronauts who lost their lives in space or while preparing for spaceflight, which there were many. And so this is actually quite a long article that goes into the rest of spaceflight. It doesn't really talk much more about Yuri. But this man was so loved. I mean, he is still on murals all over Russia. I mean, you could just, and he's got busts in parks. They worship this guy. And you could just see, like, there's murals all over the place. And he was always smiling. He was always happy. Supposedly that they were always very, he was just a very, oh, this is a rare picture of him not smiling. Because most things that you see of him, he's smiling. You can see here, you can see it's probably in that museum they referenced earlier. And yeah, I mean, there are just countless images of him all over Russia. I mean, he's, you know, they're very proud of this, you know. So on anniversary, this is from today, Putin actually says Russia must remain a space power. Now let's read about this. He called on Monday for Russia to remain a great power in space, as the country celebrated the 60th anniversary of the legendary flight that made Yuri Gagarin the first person in orbit. Russia's space industry has struggled in recent years and been hit by a series of mishaps, but the sending of the first human into space on April 12, 1961 remains a major source of national pride. After visiting a memorial in southern Russia at the site where Gagarin landed after his 108-minute trip around the Earth, Putin told his government to do more to maintain Moscow's position in space. In the 21st century, Russia must maintain its status as a nuclear space power, Putin said in a televised remarks. We will analyze the needs to be done to what needs to be done to strengthen our position in this strategic industry, he said, noting that the space program is directly related to national defense. Putin called for a review of major projects and a new space development strategy over the next or at least 10 years. The day of Gagarin's flight is celebrated every year in Russia as Cosmonautics Day, and this year authorities pulled out all the stops to mark the 60th anniversary. With around-the-clock television coverage, murals on high-rises, and laser projections of Gagarin's portrait. For Moscow commuters, the morning started with a broadcast on the metro of the original report by state news agency TASS about the launch, followed by Gagarin's legendary words, Pekali, let's go. He straight up went to space and said, let's go. I love that. That's awesome. As his Vostok spacecraft lifted off, let's go to space. Come on. That's pretty awesome. All right. Let's continue. In a message from the International Space Station, the four Russians on board saluted all Earthlings and hailed Gagarin's accomplishment. All Earthlings. I like that. Gagarin's legendary 108-minute flight became an example of heroism for his successors, including us, said cosmonaut Oleg Novitsky. Vostok took off carrying Gagarin, he was 27 at the time, son of a carpenter and dairy farmer, from the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, then part of the Soviet Union. And then, of course, we've kind of went over this. He landed in a potato field in front of a 5-year-old girl, Rita Nurskanova, and her grandmother. How cool would that be? You're sitting in a potato field. Life probably is pretty boring out in the middle of Russia somewhere, maybe Kazakhstan. Yeah, it was Kazakhstan. And, you know, you're just with your grandma, you know, just, what are you, checking the potato fields, seeing everything's good. You look up and there's just like this man floating down from the sky, landing in front of you wearing a space suit. It's got to be amazing. That's got to be amazing. Anyway, so yeah, Russia is obviously trying to get back in. I mean, they took a hit from SpaceX last year, basically took over. They had a monopoly on bringing astronauts to the International Space Station using the Soyuz rocket. And last year basically ended that. SpaceX have, created the Dragon capsule, and now they have, Americans are flying into space from American soil again after a long time, and it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. So let's go. I love that so much. I don't know how to say this. Poikali. Poikali? I don't know how to pronounce it. Any Russian speakers out in chat know how to actually pronounce that word? Anyway, it's pretty cool. It's the first human into space. That should be celebrated everywhere. I mean, people should know about this guy because he's the first human being to go to space. We should celebrate that because that's an amazing achievement. That, I mean, Russia launching Sputnik or the USSR, that spawned NASA. It started the space race. We're in space, and it set in motion everything as far as getting into space. We didn't think about it. Because they did it, we had to do it. So we had to, get it going. So, I don't know. I'm just checking chat to see if there's anybody that knows how to say it. That's all right. It's all right. All right, let's move on. Very cool. Really cool hearing about this guy. I've known about him for a while, but never really delved into it. Pardon me. All right, so let's talk about this new city, this Egyptian city that was buried in sand for over 3,000 years. This is very cool. Check this out. All right, this is from the Ministry of Tourism and Antiquities. All right, Dr. Zani Hawass announces the discovery of the lost city in Luxor. The Egyptian mission headed by Dr. Zahi Hawass discovered the lost city under the sand, which was called Ascension of Aton, which dates back to the region of King Amenhotep III. The city continued to be used by King Tutankhamun, and that is 3,000 years old. I'm just going to read this too, because Zahi Hawass announced discovery of the lost golden city in Luxor. The Egyptian mission found the city that was lost under the sands and called the Rise of Aten. The city is 3,000 years old, dates to the reign of Amenhotep III, and continued to be used by Tutankhamun and I. Look at this. This is awesome. These are different artifacts that they found. That is beautiful. It still has color. Look at that blue. I'll go down here and give you some more here. All right, this is very cool. And I found a really amazing write-up on it. Let's see, is this it? Oh, here. So this is, I just have a few pictures of different things. Look at the ink on this. It is beautiful. Here's some more of the artifacts that they found. I really can't tell what these are, but very cool. Look at that huge pot. Amazing, amazing. I got a couple more images. This looks like a necklace of some sort. Little tiny pot. Very cute. All right, so this is a great article that I found that sums it up very nicely. 3,400 years ago, a contentious ancient Egyptian king abandoned his name, his religion, and his capital in Thebes, modern Luxor. Archaeologists know what happened next. The pharaoh Akhenaten built the short-lived city of Akhetaten, where he ruled alongside his wife Nefertiti and worshipped the sun. They praised the sun. After his death, his young son Tutankhamun became ruler of Egypt and turned his back on his father's controversial legacy. But did he, though? Or was he stabbed in the back and killed as a youth, and then thus ending the reign of the pharaohs? Anyway, that's another story. But why did Akhenaten abandon Thebes, which has been the capital of ancient Egypt for more than 150 years? Answers may lie in the discovery of an industrial royal metropolis within Thebes that Akhenaten inherited from his father, Amenhotep III. The find, which has been dubbed the Lost Golden City of Luxor, in an announcement released today, will generate as much enthusiasm, speculation, and controversy as the renegade pharaoh who left it. Amazing. Akhenaten, who left the Golden City for the new capital of Amarna, encouraged a startlingly different style of Egyptian art. Yes, Amarna actually, they almost tried to destroy Amarna because they were all about the balance between the masculine and the feminine, which is actually like classical Egyptian, and worshiping the sun and, you know, maintaining it. It's a really cool, I'm getting sidetracked because it's not really about Amarna here, but really cool. I love Egyptian everything. Because the city was initially discovered just in September of last year, archaeologists have only scratched the surface of the sprawling site. And understanding where this discovery ranks in Egyptological importance is hard to say at this time, and the level of preservation found so far, however, has impressed researchers. There is no doubt about it. It really is a phenomenal find, says Salima Akram, Ikram, an archaeologist who leads the American University in Cairo's Egyptology unit. It's very much a snapshot in time, an Egyptian version of Pompeii. Very, very cool. The site dates from the era of the 18th dynasty pharaoh Amenhotep III, who ruled between 1386 and 1353 BC, and presided over an era of extraordinary wealth, power, and luxury. In Amenhotep III's final years, he is thought to have briefly reigned alongside his son, Akhenaten. But a few years after his father's death, Akhenaten, who ruled from around 1353 and 1336, broke with everything the late ruler stood for. During his 17-year reign, he upended Egyptian culture, abandoning all the traditional Egyptian pantheon but one, the sun god Aten. He even changed his name from Amenhotep IV to Akhenaten, which means devoted to Aten. The heretic pharaoh didn't stop there. Akhenaten moved his royal seat from Thebes north to a completely new city he called Akhetaten. Modern site name is Amarna, and oversaw an artistic revolution that briefly transformed Egyptian art from stiff and uniform to animated and detailed and colorful also. They didn't add that, but it absolutely they absolutely added so much color in the art at this time. But after his death, most traces of the ruler were obliterated. Starting with his son, the boy king Tutankhamun, Akhenaten's capital, his art and religion, and even his name were dismissed and systematically wiped from history. Only the rediscovery of Amarna in the 18th century revived the legacy of the renegade leader, which has fueled archaeological speculation for hundreds of years. Why and how did the pharaoh's controversial transformation take place? And what was everyday life under the great Amenhotep III? The newly found city could provide clues. The excavation site straddles old and new in an area renowned for its archaeological riches. To the north is Amenhotep III's 14th century BC mortuary temple, and to the south is Medinet's Habu, a mortuary temple built almost two centuries later for Ramses III. Oh, here is this This is a hieroglyphic inscriptions found on clay caps of wine vessels at the site helped to date the city of the time of Amenhotep III. Oh, that's a wine cap. Very cool, very cool. Archaeologists had hoped the space between might be the site of the mortuary structure where Tutankhamun's subjects would have been placed, the food and funerary items they offered him when he died around 1325 BC. Instead, they uncovered something very different. Zigzagging mud brick walls up to 9 feet high and piles of ancient artifacts from the era of Amenhotep III. Structures are packed with everyday items, many of which relate to the artistic and industrial production that supported the pharaoh's capital city. There are homes where workers might have lived, a bakery, and a kitchen, kitchen items related to metal and glass production, buildings that appeared related to administration, and even cemetery filled with rock-cut tombs. I believe this is a cow. Two unusual burials of a cow or bull were found inside a room in the city. Investigations are underway to determine the nature and purpose of these animal burials. Well, maybe they were the family pets. Though the size of the city has yet to be determined, its date is clear thanks to hieroglyphics on a variety of items. A vessel containing 2 gallons of boiled meat was inscribed with the year 37, the time of Amenhotep III and Akhenaten's speculated father-son reign. Scarabs, bricks, vessels, and more bear Amenhotep III's royal seal. The buildings also bear his soon-to-be heretic son's name, says Betsy Bryan, a professor of Egyptian art and archaeology at John Hopkins University. Bryan, who was not involved in the dig, visited on a day when archaeologists found a small clay ceiling stamped with hieroglyphs that said, "The Aten is found living on truth." That is an epitaph of Akhenaten, Bryan notes. Despite references to the younger king, though, she says the city is part of his father's palace complex to the north, which was named Neb Matre, or the Dazzling Aten. Very cool. That's very cool. Once Akhenaten came into power and changed course, he left his father's city and seemingly everything it contained behind. That loss is modern archaeology's gain. It's extraordinarily beautiful, says Ikram. She recalls walking through the preserved streets surrounded by tall walls where she said she expected an ancient Egyptian to come around the corner at any moment. "I don't think you can oversell it," she said. "It is mind-blowing." And this is one of these scarabs with some little guys. I don't know if these are legs. Let's see. Amulets. Just a scarab and amulets. Very cool, though. The city appears to have been reused by Tutankhamun, who ditched Akhenaten during his reign but established a new capital at Memphis. I, who later inherited the throne when he married Tut's widow, seems to have used it too. 4 distinct settlement layers at the site show eras of use all the way into the Copic Byzantine era of the 3rd through the 7th centuries AD. Then it was left to the sands until recent discovery. But why was it abandoned during the brief reign of Akhenaten? I don't know that we'll get closer to answering this question through this particular city, says Bryan. What we will get is more and more information about Amenhotep III, Akhenaten, and their families. It's early days, but I think we'll see more and more connections. Through the newly discovered city may not give up clues to the mystery of the rebel pharaoh, it will plant an even more vivid picture of the life he left behind. I gotta say, one of my bucket list items in life is to go to Egypt. I think ancient human beings that was the center of the earth at the time. There was a thriving community there, like this ancient time beings. Like, what are the pyramids to you? I did a deep dive on Nikola Tesla, and he was obsessed with the pyramids. He went to Egypt many times in his youth and studied them. And I just want to go stand in front of them, whether or not what you believe they are. I have my own beliefs. And it's interesting. I believe they had unlocked secrets of certain technologies that we are only beginning to understand now, again, I guess, rediscover nowadays. You know, Tesla had an incredible fascination with them and talked about sending energy out. And he even claimed that he learned it by studying the pyramids. And that's pretty incredible. I have an article that I have saved over here that talks about how, ooh, this, you know, breakthrough study says that we can charge your phones through the air. And I'm like, kind of like what Tesla said he could do 120 years ago. They say, well, it's his dream that he wanted to make happen. But copper reigns supreme. And it's like, you mean JP Morgan said we can't sell free energy like this? We're going to make more money on copper and selling, you know, running lines everywhere. Feels like a whole nother conversation. Anyway, I talk about it in my Tesla deep dive. Great, great episode. Someone in chat just said earth energy. Yeah, telluric current, and definitely understanding just magnetic energy. And I don't know, look at this UFO. It's floating. I'm going to spin it for y'all right now. Aliens. Aliens. Anyway, so yeah, that's very cool. I would love to go see. I'm very excited to see what happens from here. I know Amarna was a very amazing place that the priests that basically took over and got rid of the weight of the heart and are supposedly the ones that got rid of Tutankhamun because he was a young child and his father basically wanted to redo what everything happened. And Amarna was a beautiful time, a really cool place. It deserves its own little deep dive. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about cicadas, bugs, insects. They are on their way. All right, I don't know if you guys know what cicadas are, but they're very interesting, and they are loud. Check this out. Cicada invasion. They are back. Let's see here. Back in 2004, Mean Girls was playing in theaters. Yeah, by Usher was topping the Billboard's music charts. I don't even know that song. I probably will recognize it, but... And I never saw Mean Girls. That first line means absolutely nothing to me. Let's see. Small holes in the ground were opening up from which billions of bulky red-eyed wing insects would emerge, readying for a bacchanal of singing and mating and reminding humans of a horror movie. It really was terrifying. I lived through this. Crazy. Summer of 2004 waned, so did the lifespan just a few weeks long of these adult cicadas, and the larvae of the next generation dropped back to the earth where they would spend the next 17 years. This spring, 17 years later, those cicadas are part of Brood X. Ominous as the X sounds, it stands for the Roman numeral 10. For all of that time, they have been underground eating and growing. Researchers aren't sure exactly how many will surface, except that it will be in the billions. You heard me correctly. That is billions with a B, billions of cicadas. They estimate the numbers will be at least 1.5 million per acre. Per acre. 1.5 million per acre. That's right, which could mean as many as 30 of the creatures covering your average square foot. 30 in this space right here. Look at this gap. You guys see this? 30 of these guys. And they're not big, or they're not small. They're like this big, the cicadas. They're pretty big. It's pretty insane. Let's see here. Wow, that's going to be a lot. Brood X, sometimes referred to as the Great Eastern Brood, is among the largest in terms of geographical areas in the North America, according to the University of Connecticut's Cicada Mapping Project. You know what? I didn't actually click on that, and I want to see if they actually have a map. They don't have a map, but that's okay. I saw a map, and I could just kind of give you a reference. It goes as far west as maybe Iowa, down to maybe the north tip of Texas, and then almost the entire East Coast. So it goes that whole area, basically the entire eastern seaboard is going to be basically covered in billions of these cicadas. The billions of bugs will come out, scientists say, when conditions are just right, when the soil is 64 degrees and on a night that's humid enough, but free of wind and rain. According to John Cooley, who runs the periodical cicada mapping project at the University of Connecticut, they start very pale and very small, even as small as a grain of rice. But once the cicadas are above ground, they grow, and they grow fast. They're going to emerge from that hole and go climb up some vegetation and undergo their final molt to human form. That molting process takes about an hour, and newly emerged adult will be very pale when it comes out, Cooley said. And over the next couple of hours, it'll finish very quickly, finish expanding its body, then dark enough to have its adult colors. After that, the cicadas spend about a week maturing. Once fully grown, their primary objective is, you guessed it, mating. Their quest to procreate is precipitated by a loud signature song. Male cicadas generate sounds with timbales, an organ that generates sound when it contracts. The hollow body amplifies the sound. According to the project to prevent hearing in children loss, sponsored by the National Institutes of Health, cicada choruses can reach 90 decibels. And the ordinances of District of Columbia, the epicenter of the brood, say any sound over 70 decibels is considered a disturbance. This one's great. This might be enough to drown out the political noise in Washington. Highly doubt it. And you might recognize this is the shell of the cicada that you might find being all over the place, you know, all... And because cicadas, this isn't the only type of cicada. Cicadas are always around, but these are a specific type of cicada. Males sing to entice females, of course, and Jenna Jaden, who has researched the insects at the University of Maryland, likens the sound to human mating rituals. Oh. It's like a bunch of guys at a frat party. They're all singing some cheesy party song, and the college sophomore girl sees the guy, and she winks at him. So that's the female cicada's click. And so then he starts going, hey, baby, it continues faster and faster, and then they find each other. I don't know if it's all at all the same there, Jen Jaden. That's a little weird, to be honest. After all the singing and clicking, the cicadas mate and the females lay eggs in trees and other plants. Then after about 4 to 6 weeks of life above ground, the party ends with dead adult cicadas and molted exoskeletons littered literally everywhere and the next generation of cicada larvae heading back underground. Although cicada invade in great volume to overwhelm the appetites of predators, they are harmless, don't bite or sting, and aren't toxic. In fact, Jaden says, they can make tasty treats. Wait, what? I'm sorry, what now? That's right, you can eat them. She says the insects can substitute for nuts or raisins in traditional recipes, and notes that around the world, eating insects is common and can be sustainable and accessible form of nutrition. She concedes, however, that raw cicadas can taste a bit bitter. However, if you've cooked them, they basically take on the flavor of whatever they're cooked in, Jaden says. So I like them dipped in chocolate. I'm sure you do. I like them fried with batter or just fried plain with a little bit of spice on them. Oh. Interesting. Jaden says it's best to eat young cicadas recently emerged from the ground, but also cautions that the insects might not be organic if they've been living in areas treated by fertilizers and pesticides. They might not be organic, people, all right? Make sure, if you're going to eat the cicadas, if you want organic cicadas, that they haven't emerged from a place from full of fertilizers. I'm sorry, I couldn't do it with a straight face. Despite their huge numbers, they shouldn't do much physical damage. Cooley does recommend that people put netting over any younger or delicate trees because cicadas can do damage to branches as they lay eggs and feed. He also cautions against using any pesticide or repellent, noting it would take a lot of chemicals to ward off so many insects. Instead, Cooley urges people to appreciate the once in a 17-year experience and the cicada songs that won't be heard again until 2038. I think the thing to really do is to sit back and enjoy and learn and understand. This is really quite a unique thing. There are lots of species of cicadas in the world, but there are not many periodical cicada species. So this kind of this is kind of a special thing. In other words, get used to it. Now, I lived in this. I remember the last time they were out, and you can't get used to it, all right? It is ever-present. It feels, you can almost feel the sound, and it is oppressive. It's very loud. We are surrounded by a forest here in where we're at in Maryland, and it is quite loud. It will be, I'm sure, because we're surrounded by forest. And it's going to be insane. Now, I'll tell you what. I'm probably not going to eat them. I'm not really interested in eating bugs. We live in a world where we don't need to eat bugs. And yeah, maybe one day. You just want to let everyone know about noise pollution because it literally can hurt your ears. 90 decibels at a constant six to 8 week continuous sound. It might do some damage. So maybe be a little wary of that because it could actually damage your ears. They say sounds that reach 85 decibels or higher can harm a person's ears. Okay, so if you're going to be living in an area with these cicadas, look, I lived it. They are very loud. In fact, there's so many cicadas when these guys come out that you drive down the street and you're killing hundreds of thousands going a couple miles. I'm not joking. The road moves with cicadas. There's that many. It's craziness. And in some areas, there's less. Some areas, there's a lot more. So you might go through a neighborhood where there's more woods, more areas where they can live without being disturbed. So they'll come out. And they are... It is insane. So it is something to behold, though. So get out and enjoy it. Hopefully, you don't live in an area that is too infested with these things because they are loud. Make sure you close all your windows. Make sure you that's all you really can do is try to keep them out. It's insane. So yeah, so we'll see. I'm probably going to take a couple videos because if it's as loud as I remember it being, it's going to be nuts. All right, let's that's it. That's my segments for the day. Thank you all for hanging out with me. I know I took a few days off last week. I traveled to Chicago to be with my family. It was a very good time to be with them. I really enjoy hanging out with I have a very large family. And I could see already YouTube deleted some of my super chats. So I'm going to go back and find them because I saw them appear before I went live. And of course, they are missing. All right, let me go back. Here we go. All right. Robert Wiles, how you doing, buddy? I hope you are doing better now, Adam. Not easy to lose those you love. I posted some pics of some stuff my niece and sis got me. Have a blessed night, Adam. Thank you, Robert. And I actually checked that extra bag that you got was just a random mistake. So enjoy it. Thank you for your support. I appreciate you a lot. And enjoy that extra bag of coffee. So that doesn't happen often, but you just got lucky. And I'm not even upset. I'm pretty happy about it because you support me constantly and I appreciate it. So enjoy that extra bag of coffee. Well, I know you don't drink coffee yourself, but I hope your sister enjoys it. I'm sure she does. As you said that she loves the coffee. I appreciate that. Blackwell Disco, what's good? Says, dropped off my application to my local fire department. Yes, thank you. That's awesome. With qualified immunity, this trial and everything happening, it's time to hang up my badge. Breaks my heart, but I have a family to look out for. Well, I'm glad that you are serving, and I appreciate you, Blackwell Disco. I really do. Alex says, hey, Adam, did you ever check out Salvador Cesar Paez or his patents? Given the announcement of DARPA's COVID chip, I think we have next-level tech. My gosh, that's a whole... I'm going to do a segment on that because that's kind of ridiculous. People have been calling the vaccine the mark of the beast for a long time because they're claiming that there's going to be some sort of microchip part with it, and now they're actually coming out with a microchip that supposedly cleanses the blood of COVID. Like, what? So yeah, we're gonna get into that. I'm gonna talk about that probably tomorrow or maybe Wednesday when Savannah is back on the show, because I'm sure she's got some things to say about it. But I actually did check out some of his stuff, but I'm gonna look back into it because it's probably gonna go hand in hand with what I'm going to be talking about. So thanks for reminding me. The Magnum Express says, in the 80s, the Soviets developed two models of laser pistol to use in space, using a specific type of flash bulb as ammo. They never left the prototype phase, sadly, though weren't really lethal. Well, that we know of, that they didn't leave the prototype stage. Come on. Huh? Come on. Right. That we know about. Allison says, there's a museum in Kansas called the Cosmosphere, dedicated to the space race. It's awesome. You'd love it. Yes, I would. That definitely sounds like something up my alley. I never, ever thought I'd ever have a reason to go to Kansas. Funny enough, there it is. Maybe there's a reason for Kansas. All right. Jedi Knight Anakin Cringewalker says, check out JP Aerospace. At John M. Powell 1 is their president's Twitter. He answers DMs. He'd make a great guest, maybe co-host with Isaac Arthur. Oh, I would love to have Isaac on again. He was, we had a great interview the last time he came on. It was November when he was on the show. But yeah, I'll check that out. Thank you. JP Aerospace. Vosh 1985 says, hey, Benny, looks to me like you're on the wrong side of the river. What is that from? I don't know what that's from. It sounds familiar, but I'm not sure. Jonathan Duger says, I wouldn't trust anything from Zahi Haas. That dude is corrupt like Biden, but worse. Oof. I don't know much about it. Interesting. Mark Robershaw says, I plugged your coffee on Overlord DVD's live stream. Thank you, Robershaw. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. You deserve a spin for that. Blackwell Disco again says, finally got my coffee order. It's amazing. I love how fine the grounds I got are. I got the Covfefe blend. Also, I believed it's pronounced Tutankhamun. Tutankhamun. All right. Well, thank you. And thank you for ordering some Krigler coffee. I'm glad you enjoy it. And yeah, I didn't. I don't know if there's any options, but I'm glad that they're finely ground, because you really get a lot of that delicious flavor. Mark Robinshaw says, with quantum entanglement, we will change everything. Ooh, I like that. Bobcat, how you doing, bud? Have you had the chance to dig into the legendary underground city of Agartha? It's one of many bits of crypto archaeology that has caught my imagination. No, but I will look it up after the show, because that sounds very cool. Trent says, dude, I'm so not looking forward to these cicadas. I'm in Georgia, and they hit us hard every time. Oh, hard AF every time. Yeah, I was in Chicago, and that's not the epicenter, because, like, it's kind of, it's not on the, it is the outskirts, technically, as far as, like, if you look at the map. I wish I had it to show you guys, because it's quite a huge portion of America, the continental United States, and they are loud. See, Trent knows. He gets it. Mark Robinshaw says, set up some nets and catch some cicadas and eat them. No, I'm good. Robinshaw says, beef stew with cicadas. I mean, there are worse. Okay. No, gross. Mazo says, I got my first order of Krigler coffee, went for Covfefe, and made a post with my first espresso and latte. Excited to order again. Thank you. Oh, continues. Perfect coffee. Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate that. You get a spin. Awesome. I'm glad you enjoy the coffee. Yeah, the Covfefe blend is definitely delicious. Robershaw says, Krigler coffee cicada blend. No. No. Bad, Robershaw. Bad. No. Robershaw again says, funny note, we pronounce it Zicarda with more R than A. Zicarda. That sounds like a southern drawl. SB says, dice and forge. I guess 13. Well, we got our first die roll of the day. Let's see. All right. It's not 13, unfortunately, SB. I don't know if I can play the forge. I got a little, I haven't really been playing music much, but and of course we missed Friday Night Jam, but we will be back this Friday to jam out. Yeah, sorry. So sorry to disappoint. See, the numbers are starting to roll in. I'm going to read the next super chat. Let's see. Ryan Thomas says, cicada burgers on the grill, folks. Hashtag clicky boys. Technically, the girls are the ones that click. I'm just being, you know, being accurate. The Magnum Express, congratulations. It is 9. You win the dice game. You won absolutely nothing. Congratulations. Please don't spend it all in the same place. Feel free to save it for something really special one day. All right. Robert Shaw again says, all you need in space is a nail gun to kill. Yeah, because it uses like a compressed air, right? Isn't that how it works? Okay. Robert Shaw says, The Mummy. Good movie. Which one? The only one I've actually seen is... Oh, no. I think I saw the first Mummy with Brandon Fraser. And then I saw the newest one with Tom Cruise. Did you guys see that one? I thought it was good. I liked the new one. I thought it was really cool. Robert Shaw again says, we have a quantum computer for traffic in Australia. Wow, really? Interesting. Robert Wilde says, I'm going to save up the money so next year I can go with my niece and sis to Disneyland. They have robots that you can design. They can fight each other. That's cool. Right on. Like battle bots? Awesome, awesome. I like that. Robert Shaw says, if you please play us some songs before you go. Robert Shaw says, the first. Man, I don't know if I could play some songs today. Did he just misgender my cicada birder? Yeah, I did. But it says, you said clicky boys. And the girl cicadas are the ones that click. So technically, you were the one who was wrong. Ha ha. 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 Mm. But seriously, everyone, thank you so much for hanging out with me. If you haven't smashed the like button yet, please do smash that like button. Please share these videos. It definitely helps me grow. I'm fairly certain that YouTube doesn't want my channel to grow anymore, and a lot of people are telling me about how they don't get notifications about my channel when I go live. So we will see how it works, but please do... share these videos and smash that like button and subscribe. Please do subscribe if you haven't subscribed, because that's all I ask. Just subscribe. Please clap. Please clap. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to jab you. Robert Shaw says, nail gun can piece a spacesuit easy. That's why. I believe you meant pierce. I read it as pierce because I just assumed it was pierce, but you said piece. So I'm not sure if that's what you mean. Piece a spacesuit, like piece it together. Ha ha! Just poking fun, poking like a nail gun, piercing fun. Oh, I'm tired. It's been a long week. All right, you guys are fantastic. Thank you very much for hanging out with me. I will be back, of course, tomorrow, right here on Atomcast IRL. We're going to be talking about some probably more political things. There's a lot of politically charged things going on in the world today. I wanted to kind of take a break from politics, talk about some cool space stuff. Talk about cicadas and some cool ancient Egyptian sit towns that we've found. So thank you all very much. I will see you, of course, later on my Twitch channel when I go live, probably playing some Dead by Daylight. Just really love that game. And all right, I will see you guys next time. Have a good night.
Please smash the like button for Atomcast IRL. Coming to you live every night, Monday through Fridays, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time.